This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to New Books in Sociology, a podcast channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, Rituparna Padgiri, and today I'm going to be in conversation with Catherine Davis. Catherine Davis is a senior lecturer in sociology at the University of Sheffield. Catherine's research focuses on the complexities of personal relationships, and she has conducted research investigating the ups and downs of friendship, the significance of sibling relationships, the lived realities of shared housing, and most recently, the effects of Brexit on everyday family life, funded by the British Academy and Economic and Social Research Council. Catherine's recent publications include the 2021 article, Sticking Together in Divided Britain, Talking Brexit in Everyday Family Relationships, published in the journal Sociology, and the 2023 monograph, Siblings in Sociology, published by the Manchester University Press. She lives in Manchester with her husband and two young boys. In today's conversation, we will be discussing her latest monograph, Siblings in Sociology, published by the Manchester University Press in 2023. Catherine, I welcome you to this conversation and look forward to engaging with you.
Thank you for having me.
Right. So let me begin by asking you about your main motivation behind writing this book.
Yes, thank you. So I think that siblings are really, really fascinating. And when I started researching families and relationships in sociology, got my first job as a researcher, I started to realise that sociologists really weren't paying much attention to siblings. And I couldn't really understand why, because to me, siblings kind of touch upon some of the most profound questions at the heart of the discipline. So questions like, you know, the age-old nature versus nurture. How can it be that siblings can grow up often in the same house, often sharing the same parents, but turn out to be different? Or questions about what it means to resemble somebody like your sibling and be compared to them. So I was kind of puzzled about this absence. And then, of course, I also have a sibling. I have a younger sister, and I was thinking about my relationship with her. I didn't have children at this point, and how our relationship had kind of evolved and changed throughout our lives. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting as well. So all of these things kind of made me wonder why sociologists hadn't paid siblings more mind, even though I think that in popular culture, people are very interested. Siblings are featured in a lot of fiction. Famous celebrity siblings get a lot of coverage in the media. So because of that, I thought I'm going to start doing some research about this. And I incorporated siblings into a portion of my PhD research project and then kind of went from there, really.
Thank you for that wonderful response. I would also request you to talk a little bit more about the social and cultural context in which this book is located.
Yeah, okay, that's a really important question. Thank you. So the book draws upon two data sets, which I think we might be talking about in a bit more detail a little bit later in the interview. And both of those data sets are qualitative data sets based on participants who are living in the UK. So the context for the kind of empirical sections of the book book are very much based in the UK. And I'm a sociologist in the UK as well, and I think that probably a lot of the theories and concepts that have influenced me have been from a kind of movement in UK sociology of the family towards thinking more culturally in terms of our kind of personal lives and our emotions and what it feels like to be related. So I was very influenced by those sorts of works that that were part of the kind of sociology that I'd been doing. But what I have tried to do in the book is move beyond that a little bit and also try and draw upon examples from other parts of the world. Try where possible to focus a little bit on kind of difference and diversity in terms of culture and religion. I think a little bit, for example, about the one child policy in China. I draw on some literature about families in Pakistan. But that's an area where I think more work needs to be done and where it would be wonderful to be able to draw on a much wider range of literature, and something that I'm certainly keen to continue to try to do and to try to do better.
Right. So you talked about your data set, which is qualitative in nature. So could you talk a little bit about the main methods that you have used and, you know, your data as well?
Yeah. So the book isn't just a kind of book of a study. It's not one of those sociology books that writes up a study and talks about the main key findings. It draws upon two data sets that are quite different, and also kind of draws upon other literatures and theories as well. And the two data sets that I use, one is a set of qualitative interviews and focus groups with young people. And this was part of my PhD research. And that had been a wider project, exploring kind of young people's experiences of growing up in the UK. And I'd asked about siblings as part of that. So I drew upon some of that data. Really quite exciting data, especially the focus groups. I asked young people to reflect upon what it means to be a sibling, and I showed them a clip from a really popular cartoon called The Simpsons. I don't know whether you've come across it. I know that it's played in a lot of different countries, where there are two siblings who are kind of the main characters who are very different. So I showed them a clip of that and got them to discuss these two siblings. So that was really interesting to hear young people speaking about their own siblings and the influence they'd had on their lives, and a little bit more kind of generally about what siblingship is and how it works. And then I also drew upon a completely different qualitative data source, which was a mass observation directive. So mass observation is like an archive in the UK where there are a pool of participants who write for the archive, and the archive poses a set of kind of topics for them to write about in their own way, and then these are archived. And I had been fortunate enough to have the opportunity to commission one of these topics about sibling relationships, and people wrote in about sibling relationships for the archive. And I analysed those written responses as well and included them in the book. And that was really helpful because these respondents who write for the archive, well, they're adults for a start, but they also tend to be older adults. So that enabled me to think more about time and to think about sibling relationships through the life course, not just in childhood. So throughout the book, I draw upon both those data sets to try and kind of make this argument that sociologists ought to be more interested by siblings, really.
Right. So now going into the content of the book, how do you think siblingship evolves as a relationship from, you know, childhood to adulthood?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So obviously, everybody's sibling relationship is different, and there are all sorts of different ways that people might experience siblingship. So when I talk about sibling relationships, I'm including half siblings, step siblings, even people who might seem to be like siblings, but you're not necessarily related to by blood or marriage as well. So I've got quite a broad definition, and that's important, I think, to bear in mind. But I think generally speaking, sibling relationships in childhood are more often characterized by children who share the same home, at least for portions of the week. Obviously not always the case, but often. And that can mean that sibling relationships in childhood are quite intense sometimes. They're often very embodied and sensorial. So they can involve a lot of touching, a lot of noise, smells, sounds, things, mess, fighting and bickering can be a characteristic of many people's childhood sibling relationships. And it's kind of interesting that sibling relationships are one of the few where in childhood where it's almost expected that there'll be some physical fighting sometimes. And then, of course, through the life course, when we get older, we maybe don't have such physical proximity with our siblings, and we don't have that in kind of intense sharing of space. Obviously, not everybody, some people do, but generally speaking. But then I think what can happen through the life course, or certainly what I argue in my book, is that it's not just kind of a steady move in the direction of kind of more adult relationships. Sibling relationships can kind of ebb and flow through the life course. So there might be times when we're in touch a lot, when we feel closer, times when we drift apart. There might be kind of key crunch points or pinch points in the life course where sibling relationships become more intense. So typically this can be when our parents get ill, old and die. And on the death of parents, a lot of people came back together with their siblings to kind of deal with that, with the logistics of it. And in doing so, there's this kind of sense that often your sibling might be the only person who really kind of knew your parents in the same way as you, or who kind of shared those childhood experiences. So there can be a really kind of intensification of that feeling of shared biography and shared knowledge at those times in the life course. And there were also times when siblings in my study, you know, had needed one another when going through things like divorce and becoming a parent and losing your job, illness, and sibling relationships had often intensified at those times, or in other cases, maybe there'd been arguments as well. So although nobody's sibling relationship is the same and they're always really different, I think there can be a sense that a lot of children's relationships are kind of characterized by a particular embodied sort of feeling of intense close proximity. And then adult relationships, I think, ebb and flow according to different moments and times in the life course.
All right. So do you think that siblings experience wider socioeconomic events differently?
Yeah, I do. And I think this is really interesting. And I think this is something, again, that I try and pick up upon in the book. I think that we can often assume, especially when siblings are close in age, so obviously not all siblings are close in age, there can sometimes be like a really big age gap, and that age gap can mean that siblings aren't necessarily always part of the same sort of generation. socially speaking, in terms of the kind of societal level thinking of generation. But even when siblings might be very close in age, there might just be 1 or 2 years, for example, between them. Sometimes events can happen in the world that will affect them quite differently. And we mustn't assume that because siblings grow up close in age and in a similar sort of environment in terms of maybe having the same parents or the same parental home, large scale macro events like, so in the UK, for example, there was a huge increase in tuition fees at university, and that will have affected children who might just have 1 year's age gap, might just suddenly face really different financial futures if they want to go to university. Siblings might face different sort of housing situations, you know, economic crashes can affect some siblings more than others, depending on like whether they'd bought a house at a certain time and those kinds of things. So even though their parents might have had really similar, have given them really similar kind of financial support, they might end up financially in a very different sort of circumstance. And then on a more kind of micro level, the circumstances and context of the home can change as well. So you might have siblings with just a few years between them, but their parents might have got divorced, or somebody might have died, or they might have lost their job, and they might end up facing quite different sorts of economic circumstances. So I just wanted to kind of trouble the assumption that siblings will usually share the same kind of socioeconomic environment, because they don't always, and it can be quite difficult for families to deal with it when they're there might be children in the family who actually have very different socioeconomic circumstances surrounding them.
Right. And what role does, you know, the siblingship relationship play in constructing a person's personhood?
Yeah, so I think that sibling relationships can actually have a really powerful role to play in constructing people's personhood. In the book, I kind of take an approach to understanding relationships that's very influenced by the idea that our relationships are kind of felt as quite sticky. Carol Smart originally wrote about this concept in her book Personal Life. And so the idea that our relationships can affect us and kind of stick to us, even if they're not always positive. So that was something that was very much kind of at the heart of the way I theorized relationships in the book. And that definitely comes to light with sibling relationships. So it's a relationship that can kind of profoundly affect you, even if that effect might be in an oppositional one. But I think more than that, there are things that are very specific about siblings that can make them be even more influential in terms of how you kind of turn out, in terms of what sort of person you are and what sort of person you think you are. And those are things like you often compared to your sibling by other members of the family, your parents, also by people at school and in the wider community. So you often end up having a kind of sense of self that's constructed in relation to how you might be similar or different from your siblings. So you often hear about who's the funny one, the clever one, the naughty one, and you very rarely have like a clever two in a group of siblings. So that happens a lot. And then I also think there are kind of underlying sort of normative assumptions about siblings and how they might turn out in terms of whether you're likely to be a similar sort of person because you'll share maybe genetic and environmental, you might share the similar environmental context and shared genes as well. And that can kind of open up a whole load of ideas about how those sorts of things affect how we turn out as a person. So we have like some ideas about how our sibling ought to be similar or different to us that can be quite difficult to kind of shake off or move on from. So I think there are things in particular about siblings that make them more comparable, and we're often compared to them more than other relationships, and that can affect our sense of personhood a lot, I think.
Right. And just to ask you, you know, how has siblingship been portrayed in popular culture and media?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. I think that there's a bit of a kind of cultural fascination with siblings, really. We see siblings appearing a lot in fiction, from the kind of classic novels like Jane Austen's novels, things like Sense and Sensibility, where there's two siblings and one of them's the sensible one and one of them kind of follows her heart, and you know, those sorts of novels where siblings are often, and the differences between siblings are often, a key kind of trope through which authors might create an interesting narrative about these kinds of opposite different siblings. In the media, we also see a kind of fascination with, I think, like the emotions of siblings. So siblinghood is often portrayed as a relationship that's particularly imbued with emotions, such as jealousy, rivalry, as well as love and that sort of thing. So at the moment in the UK, there's a lot of media attention on the two princes, Prince William and Prince Harry, who seem to be having a bit of a kind of quite public falling out. And the media were really, really fascinated by this idea of kind of fraternal jealousy and rivalry between brothers. And we've seen that with other examples as well. So I think that siblings are often quite fascinating, that they often can become quite a useful device for creating an interesting story. And there's a bit of a kind of, I think, preoccupation with the differences between siblings, and also with that as a relationship that is imbued with particularly strong and intense emotions.
Do you think that siblingship has been, you know, at the periphery of sociological research? Because we did talk about it a little bit. And how do you think your book changes that?
Yeah, I do think that siblings have been on the periphery of sociological research, and in some ways it's a little bit baffling as to why. I mean, I'm not saying there are no studies, there are some studies, and I do discuss those in the book, but then sibling relationships aren't central to like sociological theorizing, and on the one hand, I think that's baffling because siblings are one of our most long-lasting relationships often. They're important. Because we're often a similar generation to our siblings, we might be influenced by them in other ways. So some of our kind of key sociological ideas about things like social reproduction, about the self, about life course and educational decision making and those sorts of topics, you would think that siblings would have more of a look in. My take on why the absence is that sociology as a discipline is very much rooted in that really important idea of kind of trying to demonstrate how things are socially produced, how it's not natural for there to be inequality in society, for example. That's something that's socially produced. And in order to show that, sociologists have had to really focus on how your parents influence how you turn out in life, how your parents might influence the advantages or disadvantages you have compared to other people in society. And that's kind of how you can show inequality in a way, how that sort of gets passed along. And I think in doing that, the sociological gaze has kind of focused vertically on how you get things from the generation above and how things are passed down that way, rather than looking horizontally for forms of social influence. And I think that that's why I wrote the book. I wanted to not just show some really interesting empirical data about how siblings affect our lives, which the book does do that as well, but I wanted to kind of go further than that and also kind of push sociological theorizing and thinking to do this kind of horizontal looking as well, to take account of the importance of siblings. And I think by looking at siblings, you can start to ask different questions about some of those key sociological themes as well. So I think that by looking horizontally at the influence of siblings, we can start to think about things like socialization, the life course, relationships in new ways, and ask different questions about them.
Right. So you structure the book very beautifully around four key themes: self, relationality, imagination, and time. So I wanted to ask you the logic behind the structure.
Yeah. So I chose these four themes because they are kind of all central tenets of sociological thinking. They're kind of very much at the heart of how sociologists conceptualize the world. And I wanted to see what happened when we started to add siblings more profoundly to those ways of thinking about the world. So how, for example, looking at siblings can help us think differently about how the self is produced. How looking at siblings can help us to understand those kinds of ambivalent relationships and think about relationality a little bit differently. Imagination, I wanted to think about how siblings are kind of occupy this space where they have quite powerful norms, and as we said, like quite a lot of media attention and a bit of a public fascination around them, yet they're not scripted in the same way that parent-child relationships are. Like, the, you know, there's more diversity in how you might do your sibling relationship, and there are less kind of clear caring roles attached to them. And then time, in terms of disrupting our ideas about generation, age, the life course. So I chose those four topics because I thought that they were all four kind of concepts that are really central to sociological thinking, where I think siblings can disrupt some of our thinking. There were other topics that I could have chosen, and these kind of they're still there in the book, but they run through all of the themes. So, for example, geography and place runs through all of the themes. Emotions could have been its own chapter, but instead it kind of runs through everything. And the same with power and diversity runs through as well. So I could have chosen a slightly different four. But for me, those four themes were areas of kind of key tenets of sociological thought where siblings could really kind of help us to think in new ways, I thought.
Interesting. Just a follow-up question. How does siblingship affect the sense of the self and, you know, the relationships with other social institutions?
Yeah. So we've touched upon how kind of siblings are really important to our sense of personhood. And some of those same ways that sibling affects personhood, so, for example, being compared a lot to our siblings, also follows us in different social institutions. So I think outside of the family. So I think that education would be a real kind of key way that being a sibling and having siblings can really affect how you interact and how you experience the institution of education. So that might be that you end up in the same educational institution as your sibling and you get compared by teachers and pupils. It might be that even if you don't end up in the same school at the same time as your sibling, you might end up using your siblings' experiences that you might have witnessed in order to kind of inform the way you interact with that institution. So there were lots of young people in my study who talked about having learnt from an older sibling to make sure they worked harder or not get into trouble or something. So kind of learning from the mistakes of your sibling. There are other institutions as well. So looking at kind of the more wider sort of community and the way that being a sibling affects how we interact there. That wasn't such a key feature of my book, but I draw upon other sociologists who've looked at that sort of way of being in your neighbourhood. And then, of course, the family is a kind of key social institution which has siblings at its heart, even though a lot of family sociology hasn't looked specifically at siblings.
Right. So what does it mean to live with this idea of siblings?
Yeah. So in the book, I make this argument that we live with our siblings and we also live with the idea of siblings. And by that, I mean that there are strong kind of normative ideas and assumptions about what being a sibling or having a sibling means. And I guess we would expect this to be the case because there is a lot of fictional media and news media that focuses on siblings. So there are kind of quite strong normative tropes around siblings, like how they might be a sensible one and a silly one, like in Jane Austen's book. But also there are ideas about how things get passed on in families, how things might... the siblings might resemble one another or not, or how nature versus nurture might play out in a family with the siblings. And all of those are kind of ideas about siblings that I think we live with, even if they don't really reflect the reality of our sibling relationships. And some very particularly strong ways that this happens is around gender and age gap. So if we take gender, there were assumptions, and young people particularly talked about this in the study that I used for the book, about how maybe there are certain expectations that if you have a brother, they might be more protective, or if you have a sister, then you might be able to be best friends together. And most of the children who talked in that way admitted that their own relationships with their brother or their sister weren't like that at all, but they still had this idea that that they imagined it would be really lovely. So a lot of children imagined a particular sibling relationship that they didn't have. So they might, for example, imagine having older siblings if they're the eldest in their family, or if they're an only child, kind of yearning for this idea of a sibling that you never had, or if you've got a sister, imagining what it would be like to have a brother. So those are these sorts of these powerful imagined relationships that we live by, social historian John Gillis said that we have two families, the one that we live with and the one that we live by. And the one that we live by is the kind of idealized version of what a family ought to be. And I think that that can occur quite strongly with sibling relationships in terms of this kind of yearning, maybe, or imagining the sibling that you never had.
Well, last question. please also talk a little bit about how the book contributes to the fields of sociology of kinship as well as sociology of childhood, and what could be the scope of future research in this area?
So I think it contributes to sociologies of kinship and childhood in a number of ways. Like the most basic contribution is that it starts to develop what is quite a small field. So the kind of the sociology of sibling relationships within childhood sociology or kinship family sociology is really underdeveloped, and there aren't loads of studies. And the book kind of adds a sort of text that can start to grow this area a little bit more. But I think it does more than that. I think that I hope it does more than that. I hope that it helps the sociology of childhood, for example, to think about the ambivalent, embodied importance of relationships. It helps as well to kind of move on from just thinking about siblings as only something that happens to children, and to think about siblings through the life course as well. So to kind of extend and stretch how we think about siblings sociologically. In terms of kinship, I think it kind of helps to develop work that speaks to the importance of our relationships for our sense of self, and the really develops ideas around how our relationships shift and evolve over time, how we have imagined relationships, and the power of that kind of normative understanding of relationships that we live with as well, as the ups and downs of our kind of day-to-day relational lives. And I think it contributes to other sociologies too. I think it contributes to the sociology of self and identity. I think it contributes to understandings of the life course and of kind of normativity and imagination and how that works. And also I think the sociology of emotions. I think emotions are very much present in the book because siblings are often experienced in a very emotional way, even if that main emotion might be like irritation. So I think that it contributes beyond, I hope it contributes to sociologies beyond the family as well.
Well, thank you so much, Catherine, for engaging with me on your new monograph. And as I have read it, I can say it's an absolutely fascinating read for all sociologists, and I hope that they, you know, take to it. Thank you once again for doing this for NBN.
Thank you so much for having me and for your brilliant questions.